Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls. Brad Schreiber is with us. His book, of course, Revolutions End, and back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Brad Schreiber as we talk about Revolutions End. Where do you get the book, Brad?
It's in stores, and I believe they have it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It just came out yesterday, as a matter of fact, and there are some pictures, including one that's never been published, and it's the image of the burned-out house in South Central the day after the shootout and fire, and it's just got random people walking through the wreckage, and it's incredibly powerful. I just found a guy who had taken that picture 40 years ago and licensed it from him. It's really powerful.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls here for you. We'll go to Bill in Perry, Indiana, to get things started. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Brad. Hey George.
Hi.
Hey, I had a question about, I actually have two questions. Number one, is your book title an allusion to the famous Kafka quote, revolutions in, leaving behind the slime of a new bureaucracy? And my second question is, you know, I'm pretty much as far left as it gets on the political spectrum. And I've noticed there seems to be this effort to really create a new, or to conjure up a new violent radical left, but there just isn't any in America. But do you think that they might actually do an operation like with the SLA?
Okay, for the first thing, Revolutions End, what was your source? Because I'd never heard that before, and it fascinated me. Where did you hear it?
Oh, that's a famous Franz Kafka, the writer Kafka.
Franz Kafka. Wow,
yeah.
That's great. I happen to love Franz Kafka, and I did not know that. My agent came up with the title Revolution apostrophe S End. And I was very pleased by it. By the way, if I can tell you and George parenthetically, two other publishers, I've been told I can't mention their names, but one was a major university press in California and one was a major independent press in Chicago, both accepted this manuscript and then changed their minds. They got cold feet. Too critical of the U.S. government. You know, it's interesting to note that there is a new Black Panthers. But the new Black Panthers is very anti-white. And what was interesting about the Black Panthers that formed in 1966 and scared the hell out of Reagan and everybody else is they were starting to work with whites on the left against what they didn't like in society. And that would have been a very powerful coalition. But there was a lot of infiltration. In fact, the government was so effective that any radical group you could name in the 1970s had been infiltrated by agents. And so any movement there was doomed.
Were they more paranoid then, Brad, than they are today?
Man, that's an excellent question. I think the tactics have changed, George, and I'm seeing that rather than implanting electrodes and having people shooting up things or putting drugs into people and having them create phony groups, that it's now about information warfare. It's about cyber warfare. And it's fascinating and complex, and it's out of control. I mean, there's this new show on USA called Mr. Robot. I don't know if you're...
I haven't seen it. I've heard about it.
I just am so impressed by the complexity of it. And I'm seeing a real increase in cyber terrorism as a means of angry political change. And the really fascinating thing about it is it's easy to do, and it can be used by the left, the right, or anybody.
Let's go.
Really hard to track.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Paula in Omaha, Nebraska now. Hi, Paula. Good morning.
Hi, George. Hey, listen, I want to say that you are just wonderful.
Well, thank you.
The things you do for people, you have no idea. You just have no idea. And this night really grabs me because some of the things you're talking about, I have actual experience with it. Some of these things have actually happened to me. As far as an organized group of people, these people don't leave calling cards, but they're ex-military. They're definitely military. I have almost been a victim of some of this stuff, the mass shootings. I had some firearms, and I had to buy them, not because I'm into guns, but for self-defense, because of some of the things I've gotten caught up in. And those firearms are gone, but I've almost been in situations where I've been set up for this, and enough people around me know about it because I've been so vocal and verbal about it that I've been tipped off, and I've been able to get out of the situation. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen, but at least tonight I told at least a million people that if a mass shooting happens in Omaha, Nebraska, and it's a middle-aged woman, she didn't do it. Hello?
Yeah, we're thinking about that. What do you mean she didn't do it?
Yeah, well, it's insidious because the more that science develops, the harder it is to figure out what has actually happened. So if you think about it, in the early 60s, you could implant an electrode in someone's head and make them forget a period of time. So, you know, a lot of people talked about this in connection to Sirhan Sirhan and the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy in Los Angeles, because he was in jail and he was doing automatic writing, writing the same thing over and over again, kill RFK, which led a lot of people, without any proof, unfortunately, but a lot of people to say, this guy was hypnotized.
A Manchurian candidate, just about.
Yes, and in fact, in my book, Death in Paradise, I talked about that case and the fact that there was a security guard named Thane Caesar who disappeared from the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel, and a lot of people think that Sirhan was used as a patsy and that the real assassin was dressed as a security guard and got away.
Well, his attorney, and he is his attorney, William Pepper, believes exactly the way you do.
Yeah, but, you know, so that's like the 60s. So here we are in 2016. Just imagine what they can do scientifically. And you come to understand that it would be even harder to prove mind control. It's a completely different world. And also, you know, as I say, cyber terrorism, you don't even have to employ somebody to go in and shoot up a place. You can just wipe out their hard drive, and it's very devastating.
Brad, what's the end game? What are they looking for? What do they want to do?
I tend to think that power corrupts, and that anyone, no matter where he or she starts out in terms of ethics and politics, and what is intended to be done, that in order to preserve power, you'll do virtually anything when you get there. I'll give you a perfect example.
Okay.
The Iraq War. A lot of people talk about Colin Powell and say that if Colin Powell had had the courage to say, I am being asked to confirm that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but I'm telling you now, even though I'll probably be drummed out of the military, that I think we are being forced into war, and I'm telling you that I have not seen convincing proof of those weapons of mass destruction, it could have averted the Iraq War.
They would have bounced him on that one.
You're right. It would have destroyed his career. But my attitude is, you are in service to the United States of America. It's not about you and your career. It's about your service. When our brave men and women die in action, they are saying, I'm willing to give my life to serve the country. Shouldn't politicians and other people in positions of power have the same attitude?
Brenda in Alamogordo, New Mexico. Hello, Brenda, you're up with us.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. And
Brad, I have a question for you. Do you know much about the 1961 Disarmament Act with John F. K. Kennedy?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. All I heard was John F. Kennedy.
the 1961 Disarmament Act?
With the Soviets.
I don't know a lot about it, but I'm willing to learn.
Okay, well, he signed it with the UN, the United Nations.
Yeah.
And it had three phases for America, because on the surface it sounded pretty good, but you can't have more power to kill somebody than we do. So it was like an armistice type thing. But very nefariously, it had a part where the United States citizens would have to be giving up their arms, and then eventually we'll have to give up our military, and we become part of the UN.
Wow.
And then you come to modern time with J. Helm 15, rumors of martial law. You already had an attack on Trump where someone tried to take his life. That didn't make big headlines. And supposedly the guy was linked to FBI. And then you've got rumors there might not even be an election because of martial law. And I was just curious on what you thought about that.
Well, I was listening before I went on air with some of the news that George had on, and I think it's very dangerous to talk about the election being fixed if you don't have proof. But on the other hand, I'm willing to admit that if you can have machines that don't have paper backup, that are electronic, then how do we know that our elections aren't rigged? It seems to me that we should have one system of voting. We certainly have enough money. We're the richest country in the world. Why can't we take some of that money and have uniform voting machines in all the states and have paper backup so we know that nobody's gaming the system?
And you don't know what's going on if you don't have that paper backup system.
Absolutely. I mean, people keep getting more sophisticated. Like, if you think about all the attempts, cyber terrorism attempts, that go on every day in this country, people trying to hack into the Pentagon and corporations, and they're constantly creating new protections, and then the hackers are coming up with more sophisticated ways of breaking in. It's so sad because it's such a waste of our resources, and it's also very scary.
It's almost, Brad, as if those groups, those organizations that are doing things like this don't care. They probably say, nobody's going to believe it anyway, so we're just going to do it.
Yeah, I guess you might say that they're anarchists, that their attitude is, I don't really care what damage I create, and I have no respect for authority, and it's almost like a bad teenager. You know, in fact, so many hackers are young men, almost like the pranks of yesteryear. Instead of dropping a water balloon on somebody's head, you wipe out the files of some company.
Let's go west of the Rockies. David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Well, howdy, George and Brad. You know, I'm more interested in the financial angles of scandal. Usually I think those are the motivations. And I'm wondering if either of you are paying attention to two big scandals. One's called the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation. And they've apparently just had to do a settlement for decades worth of money laundering for the drug cartels.
Wow.
So when you start looking at the, you know, like Black Lives Matter movement and how drugs, crack especially, have just eaten away at the black neighborhoods. Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation are the motivators of it. They're the profiteers. And they only had to pay a measly $1.9 billion.
Which is nothing for them.
Sure. And they get 1,800 days to stop doing
it. 1,800 days to stop.
Yeah, so that's the first one. And then the second one is a thing I just realized. It's called the Black Eagle Trust. And this is there's an interesting tie of Black Eagle Trust to the 9-1-1 incident, where back in the year 1991, when the Soviet Union was falling apart, the CIA came up with a fake bond issue. It actually had money to it, but it was an illegal, under-the-table bond issue that had no authorization. of $250 billion, and their purpose was to buy up the former Soviet Union. So they went in there with endless amounts of cash, bought up every street and road and bridge and housing development and all the assets of the former Soviet Union they could get. And then that bond issue was supposed to run 10 years and run out on September 12th of 2001. So the places where the paper documents were in the Pentagon as well as in the World Trade Center. So I'm wondering if you're familiar with this story and who owns the Soviet Union, if this is true.
I had not heard about that. It's really fascinating, and I have to compliment George and the listeners because I'm disseminating information, but at the same time I'm learning about other stuff going on in the world. And I, too, am interested in the financial empires that really control things behind the scenes. One thing I can talk to that I do know about, because I try not to talk about subjects about which I know very little, that's a good idea. There is a movie called Kill the Messenger with Jeremy Renner. Jeremy Renner plays a San Jose Mercury newsman named Gary Webb.
Yep.
Gary Webb won a number of awards for his story about how the CIA, in cooperation with drug cartels, flooded the inner cities of America with crack cocaine. And it's no longer conjecture that the agency was involved, as well as dealing with criminals. Not the first time, by the way, that the CIA has rubbed shoulders with criminals. But the fact of the matter is, I think we have to be careful when we talk about Black Lives Matter and crack cocaine to remember that even if the people in the inner city are predominantly black who are using the drug, where did the drug come from?
And it's all about the money, Brad. All you have to do is follow the money, and you will get there, to be sure. What's Patty Hearst doing now? She's still alive.
Patty Hearst, this is insane, George. She's living in Connecticut and raising show dogs. Yes, her Shih Tzu dog named Rocket won the Westminster Kennel Club Award a couple years ago.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy. Here I am writing Revolution's End and trying to disseminate the truth, and the closet radical who accidentally got kidnapped is
maybe
living in Connecticut.
Maybe. Did you try to talk with her?
I didn't. I actually know people who know her, but the thing is, I didn't think I would get the truth out of her. And if you think about it, why would I expect her to say, "Hi, for 40 years I've hidden the fact that I had a previous relationship with Donald."
What a great first question that would be, too, by the way. Brad, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. The name of the book, Revolution's End. And welcome back with Brad Schreiber and his book, Revolution's End. Brad, what are you working on now that you've got this one done?
Well, a couple of things, George. One is I've been paired up with a producer here in Los Angeles to create a 10-part limited series based on the book. So I'm currently writing the pilot
for
that
for
series. I'm working on a book about music. You know, I wrote a book about the early years of Jimi Hendrix, becoming Jimi Hendrix, and I love music. So I have a book I'm working on about songs that change the nature of politics and history, starting with Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan, and moving through all kinds of music. So that's a project that I'm working on. And then there was a 1970s comedy group called Fire Sign Theater, and Phil Proctor was a founding member, so I'm helping him write his autobiography.
Oh, that's cool.
So those are a couple of the things that I'm working
on. And you're still writing for the Huffington Post?
I don't get much time to do that because of consulting, and then I fly out to teach in Madison, and But I still do arts journalism, and I love going out to the odd movie or theater production when I can.
All right, let's go back to the phones. East of the Rockies, Karen in Philadelphia. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the show.
I just want to say hi to you brothers because I'm so thankful for this discussion that is also reconfirmation. In 1975 and 76, my late husband and I lived in Eugene, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, everybody who was anybody came through there. For instance, there was this group called The Two and another group called Stargate that came through, and they would give lectures, and people would leave Eugene and follow them. Some went to Guyana. The other thing that really gets me right now is a lot of the callers have reconfirmed the fact, too, on a jump. We note that what happened in Louisiana and Texas is definitely a modus operandi of CIA. People forget that our president, George Bush, once controlled and was the head of the CIA. I never hear people make that parody. But for you, Brad, congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
And I really want you to explore two things. One, the Beatles song lyrics on The Revolution. It's going to be a revolution or whatever it's entitled.
Revolution.
Take a look at that. And also, the situation at hand about this CIA possible involvement. Because when we forget history, we tend to repeat it. We do believe truly that the world is all about retina scanning now, singularity, and chipping. Along with chipping is the process of installation of these chips or through GPS also, believe it or not. Because one day we were riding in the car, and it seemed like the GPS lady on North Star deal was listening to our conversation when we weren't asking directions. So I asked her. I said, can you hear what? I said, it feels like you're in the car with us. I said, can you hear what we're talking about when we're not asking about directions? And she started giggling. She never responded, yes or no. And finally, George, in response to your question or comment about what is the end game, what's the end game going to?
Yeah.
My understanding is truly what the other caller said, martial law, because it really kind of connects. I think they really thought by killing those police officers, which I'm so sorry these things have happened, that they really were going to get the black people to come up against and create havoc like they normally might do in some past historical moments. But it didn't work for them quite because they keep upping the ante and keep doing more things. Something happened in Austin, you know, something happened in places that normally you wouldn't have this kind of behavior. So I'm saying again, when we don't understand history, Robert Anton Wilson, I'll never forget him. He wrote a trilogy, and if you review that, Brad, you might find that there was something called Operation Mind Blank. I can't say the other word because we're on the air. But in that trilogy, in that book, are very true facts that were written in a novel sense of the word of what was going on in Eugene, Oregon, what was going on with Patty Hearst and that whole situation. We really realized that mind control is a lot bigger than just behavior modification. It's in the food, it's in the way that TV is subliminally programmed. It's in everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vacaville, one final note. I have somebody I know who's currently in Vacaville. And he's been in prison for life. He also was in Eugene, Oregon at the time in the 70s. There's just a lot going on, and I hate to bounce all over the place, but I had called intentionally to talk about Texas and Louisiana and the CIA involvement and how they painted those two men who are military men without even giving them a one word of evidence.
Let's get his take on this for a moment. Brad, there are some people that believe that these shootings of police officers are arranged, are set up. What do you think?
Well, in a way...
There's a lot of hate there. There's no doubt about that.
There's a lot of hate on both sides. And it's not surprising that with 2 days back-to-back, a police officer involved shootings, that then we started seeing the shootings of police officers. It's hard to prove that there is a conspiracy to shoot police officers. I tend to feel that there's a real frustration that recalls the days of the 70s when people were very violently against the status quo in this country.
Yeah, and now they're doing violent things.
They are, and it's extremely scary and dangerous. But there are ways, there are concrete things that we could do to actually make the communication between suspects and police officers better. Some of that is informing people how to behave when they're stopped by a police officer. And on the other side, some of those things are about body cams so that officers can be seen treating people properly, training people who are police officers in how to stop a suspect. And frankly, I would never try and justify the shooting of a police officer, but I do want to say that it's really important that when a police officer is involved in a shooting, that there be some answer for what the officer has done. And what goes on in America is that the police officers are not punished, they're not fined, they're not fired, they don't go to jail. And then, irrationally, people get even angrier, and then you see these awful shootings.
But Brad, the reason why they're not being fined or going to jail is because 9 out of 10 times, they're proven to be doing what they have to do, and that's protect us.
That's true. They do have to protect us. So we all agree that most cops are clean and are doing a very difficult job.
No question about it.
So if there is an odd officer who behaved very badly, had bad training, or just simply panicked, what do we do with that officer? If we don't punish that officer in any form whatsoever, then the other side creates this illusion of, oh my God, they can do anything they want.
Well,
of course, is not true, but it perpetuates this myth of the police can do anything they want, and then bad actors go out and shoot cops.
I think officers who clearly violate their oath are supposed to be punished to the max of the law. But, you know, when you have some kid going for your gun as a police officer, there's not much that officer can do other than defend himself.
Absolutely. Now, and I am talking about very few incidents.
The only one I've seen lately was that episode where the police officer stopped a guy in his car, and then the guy got out of his car and just started running away. He had no gun, nothing. He just started running, and the officer chased him and shot him down and shot him dead. That was a violation. That was bad stuff. The most recent one, where I believe it was in Minnesota, the individual sitting in the front seat of his car with his girlfriend and the baby's in the back seat, he tells the officer, I have a handgun here in the car, and he reaches for his wallet.
Right.
The poor cop doesn't realize that and starts blasting away.
Right.
That's a situation of, was it poor judgment? We'll find out.
It's interesting. I think that I saw a video made by some music guy instructing people, citizens, in how to behave when you're pulled over by a cop.
Which is brilliant.
On the wheel, and
turn the light on if it's nighttime.
Right, and don't go for your wallet until the cop says, "I'd like to see."
Roll down your window. Put your hands on your steering wheel. Maybe even stick your head out the window and look at him. But don't do anything stupid.
Yeah. So my attitude is both sides of this very dangerous equation need training. The citizen needs training in how to behave. The cop also needs training because it's a very difficult job. And someone who doesn't have proper training, admittedly, it's a rarity, but they can overreact to someone who doesn't even have a weapon, and we don't want that happening.
No. I mean, if you're a cop and a kid points a gun at you,
yeah,
that is a toy, but you don't know that.
You don't know that.
What are you going to do?
I agree with you, George. I would not discipline that cop.
No, you can't.
Not in that case at all. But if no cops get disciplined and there are some really egregious cases like a guy being chained in the back of a wagon and slammed back and forth until his spinal cord is broken.
Well, you're talking Freddie Gray, but they let them all go because I don't think there was any intent there.
Yeah. Well, look, maybe you don't even fire the cops. Maybe you find, maybe it's a civil suit. Maybe it's something so that the citizens don't feel, look, we have no redress.
Well, yeah, but if they didn't do anything wrong, if they were performing their duties, I don't think you should penalize them.
Right.
You know, and until you find the bad cop who has done something stupid and bad, like chasing the guy who's running out of his car, that's a different situation. Go after him. That's murder, as far as I'm concerned.
Interestingly enough, there's a connection to Revolution's End and the shooting of a young black kid in Emeryville, which is in the East Bay, that incited even more problems right around the time that Marcus Foster was assassinated. So obviously these are trigger points, you know, where there's an officer involved shooting and then people get out of control. And the next thing you know, there's rioting or shooting. You know, we've got to learn to sit down and talk to each other about this stuff and not take the law into our own hands. But we also need the government to think about how do we train our police officers to make them even better. Because you can always be better in your job.
Of course, of course. Brad, your book, Revolution's End, is opening up more than just the Patty Hearst kidnapping case.
Oh, it's a wild story. I left out some stuff that I couldn't even fit in, but maybe that'll be a follow-up book. But it was fascinating. And remember, I lived some of this stuff when I was in the Bay Area. I met some of these people, and it was another world, man. It was just so strange.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody in the movement was like, we're going to take over. We're going to topple Nixon. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think you're going to.
We don't want that either.
You just look in the eyes of those people, George, and they were so angry. And
you see that now too.
My heart goes out to the people because, you know, they weren't just pure terrorists. They were, a lot of them were upper middle class white kids who just wanted justice, but they wanted to go about it in the wrong way, and they were very frustrated.
Well, and they got, some of them got caught up in the movement. They got pulled into it.
Yeah, they did, and they didn't know how else to affect change.
Thomas in La Jolla, California. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And Brad, I hope you complete that project on the history of the Fire Sign Theater. Great group. The question that I have, I'd like to drill down into the mind control aspects of the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Okay.
There were researchers at the time in the 1970s, Donald Freed, Walter Boart, Mabe Russell, who, well, they reported that, number one, that Donald DeFries's body after the shootout in Los Angeles, it was returned to the family, and this was also reported in the Los Angeles Times, but it was returned to the family minus his head.
And
it appeared that the head had been sawed off.
Jeez.
Okay, and the family sued the government because they said, we want the entire body.
That's right.
The second thing was the Harrises, husband and wife. I believe Emily Harris and I want to say Steve Harris. But it was rumored that they were like Donald DeFries's handlers. Whatever happened to them? Did they survive the shootout?
Yes, they did. The Harrises eventually got divorced. Here's the thing. Donald Freed, F-R-E-E-D, is a major aspect of Revolution's End. And I talk about the fact that he funded an organization that investigated a lot of this. And I actually know Donald Freed, and I complimented him on what he had done back in the 70s. He was a major investigator and brought other people in. Mae Russell, I used to listen to on the radio. Mae Russell is one of the first people to make clear that Donald DeFries was an LAPD informant and talk about Vacaville, Colston, Westbrook, etc. The one thing that Mae Russell did wrong, in my opinion, and I do respect her for what she did, is what she tried to say is that all the white followers, in addition to DeFries, were all mind control victims. And that's simply not true. They were naive, and they were violent and willing to follow DeFries, but not one of those people would have followed him if they'd known that he was an LAPD informant. And Mae Russell got that wrong.
Yeah, she was. She started really investigating the JFK assassination, didn't she?
Yeah, that's right. I also talk about the fact that she was inspired to be a researcher by the novelist Henry Miller, who she knew, who lived in Carmel. She said, I've got all this information about the JFK assassination, and I don't know. I feel like I want to spend my life being a researcher. And Henry Miller said, then do it.
Yeah.
You obviously have a great passion for it. You need to do it.
She was born out this way, Beverly Hills, California. Hey, Brad, we are out of time, but I want to thank you for being on the show.
Hey, George, thanks for your pursuit of the truth. I love what you guys do, and I appreciate the time.
We will never give up. Up next, we're talking about consciousness. Stephen Schwartz joins us on Coast to Coast AM.